All right. Hello and welcome back to the Layover Podcast. This is season 6, episode 1 of the podcast. Maybe, I don't know how we do our numbering system, but here we have with us Scotty Allen, our guest for this season from the excellent channel Strange Parts, made by Scotty Allen. Welcome, Scotty.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
We also have Ben Doyle from Adam and Ben.
Hi.
And Adam Chase from Ben and Adam.
Hello, Governor.
Oh my God. Adam, you have a British accent now. That's crazy. You're so worldly.
Aye, puppet. I think it's working.
So Ben is serving two roles today. Ben Doyle is played by Ben Doyle, and Adam Chase is also played by Ben Doyle in this episode, which is slightly confusing, but Adam is out doing, where is Adam actually even? Are they allowed to know? Do you know?
I don't know that they're allowed to know where Adam is, but I can say that he is with his girlfriend on vacation. Don't go find him.
Yeah. I just don't know where he physically is.
I know where he physically is.
Yeah.
He's in the desert.
Oh.
That's all I'll say.
Oh.
That's it.
Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay. Well, anyways, so yeah, Adam is off this week. And because this is weirdly actually a job, he is off from the podcast too. So he can, you know, take the time off. This is a precedent that we think is worth setting. So sometimes you might not see Ben or myself. But you probably always will see Scotty because we force him to come.
Yep.
Yay.
The indentured servitude of jet lag.
Yeah. So who are you, Scotty?
Well, that's a broad question.
Tell us everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
I'm an engineer turned now YouTube creator.
What motivates you?
What motivates me? I really like exploring both the world at large, but also electronics and how things work and manufacturing. And it led to accidentally starting a YouTube channel 5 years ago called Strange Parts. I started it when I was living in China. And the video that I'm most well known for, which was the first one on the channel, is how I made my own iPhone in China, where I went around to the markets and collected all the various parts I needed to put together an iPhone. And since then, I've done a lot around China and manufacturing and going inside factories and a lot of modifying consumer electronics and making them do things they're not supposed to do. And yeah, generally have a really good time. And so when I heard about the concept of jet lag, because I've traveled so much, I went, oh my God, that sounds amazing. So I'm really honored to have been a guest this season.
I remember watching that first video of yours when it came out. I was 4 years old. I pulled it up on my iPad and I loved it. And I've been a fan ever since.
You were not 4 years old.
That's close enough.
You're young, but you're not that young.
Scotty, I'm sorry to break it to you, but you are 57 years old, Scotty.
I am not 57.
I know you might not feel like that.
I'm older than you guys, but I am not 57.
So on our side, I remember how the discussion went on our side when we were looking at guests. Ben, I think you said we were planning Capture the Flag across Japan. And I think if I remember, the quote was, China, Japan, same thing. What difference?
That is a very dangerous statement on both sides.
That doesn't sound like me. I know the difference. One is bigger and one is worse, but I won't say which one. That's my analysis.
That is a very dangerous statement.
I didn't say that. That's a joke quote that Sam came up with.
Do you think we're even allowed to leave that in?
It's spicy.
I understand it's borderline.
I will say that they are about as diametrically opposite countries as I have ever been to, despite being quite near each other.
Yes.
And despite sharing a written character set, it is night and day between the two countries. It is apples and oranges.
Yes. Both fantastic countries.
Yes.
In different
yes.
ways and not all encompassing
yes.
ways in some cases. But two countries that I've really enjoyed traveling in the past.
Likewise.
And to be clear, China and Japan, I agree, are very different countries. And that was a joke if we even left.
Right.
Ben did not say that. And I was gaslighting him. But how it actually went was that we realized that this season would probably require solo travel at times.
Yeah.
And solo travel is something that we've never done outside of Tag Across Europe, where it was just the three of us. So, you know, these games are complicated enough for guests by themselves, you know, in terms of just learning the rules, doing it in a foreign country, even doing it in your own country is difficult. So we wanted someone who was like a very experienced and confident traveler. And Scotty, you definitely fit the bill. And, you know, you're someone who has traveled to some very kind of like foreign environments
yeah.
in China and elsewhere and vlogged it. not really vlogged it, made videos out of it. Vlogging seems like underselling it, but made videos on site, and therefore we knew you'd be confident and great no matter what we threw at you, which definitely ended up being the case.
Yeah.
And we threw a lot at you. Ben and Adam threw a lot at you.
It was a lot, absolutely. And one of the interesting things is that despite having traveled a lot in Asia, I really don't have much experience traveling in Japan. So I think I've been there on two or three other trips, all very short. And so despite being an experienced traveler, was still very much a learning curve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we all flew over, what, 3 days before we started?
Something like that.
We arrived on a Thursday. We started on a Sunday.
We had two full days in Japan before we started.
That sounds right.
Yeah. So I think that's right. We left the US on a Wednesday. We arrived there on a Thursday. We had some difficulties in peak jet lag fashion.
Yeah.
Ben and I especially. We got there very late. It was an exciting day of travel that was supposed to be a very easy day of travel. The night before we left, it was actually the season 5 finale event that we did in New York City with Nebula. And it was great. We had like a fun little after party after. So we were all out until like 1, 2 a.m. Well, Ben went to sleep early, of course.
Yeah, I did.
But yeah, so we were out late. And then I think I woke up at 4 a.m. after going to sleep at 2 a.m. to finish my work. And then we went to the airport at like 8 a.m. And by the time we got to the airport, we heard the news. Ben and I were like sitting in the United Lounge. We got a text like, your flight is delayed due to weather concerns. And we looked outside and it was completely like blue skies, clear, no winds, perfect. And I looked at the weather in Tokyo and it was the same deal. So we were like, what's up?
I remember you were talking about it a lot, and I was trying to play on my Nintendo Switch, and that's all I remember. We were at an airport lounge. I wasn't really paying attention.
I was trying to figure out what was going on.
Turns out something crazy.
I don't understand why you don't care.
Turns out it was something crazy.
Yeah, something crazy. And I want it on the record. Ben might not remember, because I was apparently disturbing his switching, but I figured it out before the airline told us. It was a eruption over the Kamchatka Peninsula of a volcano. So like a bit of Russia that Sarah Palin was like, I can see Russia from my house, but she couldn't actually. She was lying. She cannot see Russia from her house because she lives just outside of Anchorage. But you can see parts of Russia from parts of Alaska, but you can't see the Kamchatka Peninsula, but you can see the islands that come off the Kamchatka Peninsula. Anyways, getting off track, there was a volcanic eruption and all the ash went over the Pacific, and you're not supposed to fly through ash because it makes the airplane engine sad and not work.
Because it makes the airplane dirty?
Well, dirty and underwater at times. So dirty and then maybe cleaner, but also in a lot of parts, which is not good. So anyways, so that was over like the Northern Pacific. There was a bunch of ash over the Northern Pacific. So we had to take a really southern route. And a really southern route is longer. Even though it looks like on a map that it's straight, it's actually longer because the world is allegedly a globe.
Controversial.
So the Great Circle route, it looks like it goes over. You probably know what I mean. Some of you probably watch Wendover. Basically, the southern route was a lot longer. And our airplane, it was a bad airplane. It was a 777-200, but not ER, not extended range. So it didn't have the range to take the southern route, which was like 15, 16 hours of flying time versus the normal like 12 or 13 hour flying time from New York to Tokyo nonstop. So we had to stop in San Francisco. So basically it was like we got on our plane and we just flew like the 5 hours to San Francisco. And then we had to get all the way off the plane.
Why did they make you get off the plane? Why didn't they just put more fuel in it and take off again?
Because we had to switch to a different plane.
Oh, I see.
It was kind of annoying because originally they thought that we wouldn't have to. And oh, here's another anecdote. I remember I was talking to like the flight attendants, and you know how flight attendants get like allocated their routes is based on seniority. So they get to bid for which route they want based on their seniority. So basically the flight attendants that have been around an airline for the longest, they get first dibs on routes. So you can basically tell how attractive a route is to a flight attendant based on how old the flight attendants are. So for example, the route that you used to fly all the time, like I used to live in Edinburgh and there was one nonstop flight to the US, to Newark, that ran year round. And that was the Senior Citizens Club. Those were some grandmas working that flight, but they were great. They were like so skilled and they were on top of things. They were so nice. And it was not quite that age on this flight, but it was a lot of flight attendants of a certain age who were very excited to be going to Tokyo because Tokyo's cool. And when they came around to tell me like, oh, we're not going to be continuing with you because it violates our crew rest or like our duty time limits, they were like so devastated. And so what happens then, if you have to operate a flight at like last minute notice, the most junior flight attendants at an airline, they don't actually get assigned flights in advance. They sit on reserve. So they'll go to the airport and basically sit around until they get assigned to a flight when like another flight attendant doesn't show up or there was a delay or something like that. So suddenly this flight went from like all like 50, 60, 70-year-old flight attendants to all like 20-year-old flight attendants who were like super green and junior. And it was very noticeable. And I was happy because I knew the nerdy airplane logistics explanation for it. But anyways, so it turned out that we were on our plane for like, I think it ended up being like 20 hours on the plane instead of like the original like 13 that we were supposed to do, because it was much longer flight time and we had to stop and everything and get off in San Francisco. It was kind of annoying, but we got there just 8 hours late because we also left Newark late.
After that, we hopped in a taxi and we went to our hotel. And then we got not enough sleep.
You guys took the expensive route to the hotel.
Yes. Scotty, did you not take a taxi?
I took the train because I was being mindful of budget. And I knew that the taxis in Tokyo are extraordinarily expensive.
No, you should spend more of Sam's money.
Clearly. I mean, that must have been a like $100, $200 taxi ride at least.
No, it was like $20.
No, there's no way.
No, because we were just going from Haneda. It was like 15 minutes.
Oh, okay. I came in from Narita. Narita, it would have been really pricey.
Oh, yeah, that would have been devastating. Yeah, we were just like 15, 20 minutes. But yeah, that would have bankrupted us. Yeah, Narita Airport is like, it's like an hour and a half just by like driving from Tokyo Center. It's crazy. It's like the furthest airport.
That's the one that most people fly into, right? Like that's bigger than Haneda?
It's certainly cheaper, generally.
Oh, you want more airline logistics talk, Ben?
Or we could get into the episode. I'm sure there are some people who are new to this podcast who are...
No. You asked...
Sam, tell us about these airports.
You asked for airline logistics, Ben.
I did not. I said, is that one bigger?
Yeah. So Haneda Airport, it used to be the domestic-only airport for Tokyo. And it's like right next to downtown Tokyo. Narita Airport was the international one that was like way far out. And it used to be the rules were basically Haneda was domestic only. And I think eventually they added like some near international ones to just like China and Philippines and stuff. And the other one was for international, but they changed it because reasons.
It's a lot of people going to Tokyo.
Yeah. United Airlines and Delta are like fighting over it right now. And I could tell you a great story about how they're squabbling, but it would take like the rest of the runtime of our podcast. We should probably shift to the, what was it called? The show that we were talking about?
Little thing called Jet Lag the Game.
Something lag.
Ah, yeah. That thing. Okay. Basically, we did a lot of prep things and got very stressed.
Well, as per usual, the game was not 100% complete when we arrived in Japan. Though, it was more complete than games usually are. So that was really exciting. Like last season, season 5, we showed up in New Zealand having to fix a lot of things. There was mostly just tweaking going on in Tokyo. Mm-hmm. But we were really testing ourselves because this was by far the longest and most complicated set of rules that any game has had. Which the audience is not even aware of some of the mechanics that come into play later, but the game gets way more complicated.
Yeah, way more complicated.
Yeah, and we had a lot of like behind the scenes rules just needed to like keep it working the way that we wanted it to work. I think our rules doc is 7 or 8 pages long this season, like single spacing, 12-point font. There's a lot. And that's like designed to be the abbreviated version.
Do you want to give people some examples of things that may not surface in the video, but were rules? Because I thought it was really interesting to see all the behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, I think it is worth doing that. And sometimes, a lot of the times when we write these, rules are to cover the edge cases that we don't think are going to come into play. But if they do come into play, we want to have a rule for it. And one of them did come into play in this episode, actually, which was, I think, the transiting through neutral zones thing.
Yep.
So if you remember at the end of the episode, Scotty and I are going after Ben. And we're jumping a little bit ahead of ourselves here, but it's worth bringing up for here. And there was this weird situation where it made sense for Scotty to transit through the neutral zone to get to the other end of it. That was something that almost never came up in simulation, but we recognized that it could be a theoretical possibility. That was like one of our last rule additions, I think. I think we added that while we were in Tokyo, saying that you could transit through neutral zones, but you could not tag, obviously, in neutral zones. But yeah, there are definitely plenty of other ones.
I mean, like one edge case one that doesn't come up, but like this is the sort of thing we need to think about, is we realized only after we had gotten to Japan that like there is a scenario in the game where you could essentially get stuck by being in your territory without any coins. And so you wouldn't be able to transit into enemy territory to start a challenge to get coins. And so like we have a whole provision that like your balance can go negative in that case just to get one stop into enemy territory to do a challenge. So there were like all of these things because like on the fly, we can't really change the game because we're in it then. And so we need to think of like everything that could possibly go wrong.
Yeah, and there's also like some clarification things. Like, for example, when does our 30-minute jail period start upon return to Tokyo Station? Is it when we step off the train at Tokyo Station? Is it when we get to that plaza in front of Tokyo Station? I think we set it to be the moment you get back into the neutral zone.
Yes.
Right? No. Yes?
I'm looking at the rules doc right now.
For all the listeners,
not a good sign.
This back and forth is very reminiscent of all of the conversations that they have defining the rules, which they were having up until we started the game. Like, you were still having discussions about rules maybe 15 minutes before the game started.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, you can never have too many rules.
Correct.
At least in this context. It never hurts, but part of it is just like remembering them all. And also in our cases, it's like we've discussed so many different versions of these rules that we like forget which one we landed on.
I was having that problem because I would be part of one discussion. Like we had some phone calls before we flew to Japan and I would hear one version of the game and then we'd have another call and the game would be completely different and there'd be a completely different set of rules and different mechanics. And then when I showed up in Tokyo, there was a whole nother set.
Yep.
And you guys were continuing to have like hours long discussions that you didn't need me present for that were still changing the rules. So even at least hours, if not a day into the game, I was still like, wait, what rule is this thing operating under? There was definitely a lot of catch up for me.
Yep. And that's why we have the reference doc.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely. So some quick other ones that we have, for example, like we have a rule, and this rule we actually had in Tag Across Europe, but like when you're doing a chase, you're not allowed to drop your backpack because we don't want people, you know, gaining an advantage. Well, actually, because this actually came up in our very first pilot season where y'all kind of split up with one of you holding backpacks. That's not something that we wanted to continue to incentivize. It was totally fair in that season. But like, we thought it was better that everyone's on equal footing. Nobody drops backpacks. Everyone stays together, etc. There's rules about like, for example, like we do photo tag this season. So like the rules for that, I mean, we have to tag a player, you must take a photo of them. You must be able to clearly recognize the player in the photo. And you must know that you are taking a photo of the player when you take it. You may not take photos of crowds and find them after the fact. You must take the photo within roughly 300 feet of the player. Capturing the player on video counts as taking a photo. So like, we try to correct for the ambiguity that could potentially arise if you're like really far away.
Is it too much of a spoiler to say that that rule definitely came into play at some point?
No.
Okay. It did.
Yeah. The specifics of what constituted a tag, and this is one of the things that we were also working with right up until the very end. I remember Adam and I were in the hotel measuring out distances in the hotel hallways to try and figure out what was like an acceptable distance from which you could get a photo tag of someone. But it all worked out in the end.
It did.
Yep. And then there are also like, you know, some production rules in the background. Like, for example, like the nightly hotel budget. If you're curious, $350 per person, which in most situations for us has been very generous. In Japan, less so. Japan is very expensive, especially for hotels.
Particularly in downtown Tokyo.
Yeah, we managed to find some good lower cost ones later. But yeah, especially the hotel that we stayed at, it was like a Marriott for the couple pre-production nights. I think the combo of it being, well, in Tokyo, plus like an international chain with like English-speaking staff and everything, it was like $500 a night for a hotel room that was smaller than average sized in the US. Crazy. So the moments leading up to the start of this were just about the most nerve-wracking moments in existence.
As they always are.
Because, again, most complicated game we've ever done in the most complicated to navigate place we've ever done a game in. I was so nervous, not about like, will I win or will I not, but more about like, will I play this game without just like breaking it myself? I didn't want to be like responsible for messing up the game by forgetting a rule or just like not being able to strategize correctly or anything like that. I mean, how did y'all feel?
I felt very shaky on my knowledge of the rules going into the game. partly because of what we already discussed, that the rules kept changing on me behind, mm-hmm. literally behind my back. But also, like, I mean, I think as a guest in particular, there is a lot going on that I didn't have practice with. So there's the game itself, but then there's the whole filming side of things. And so we're carrying two cell phones, one for shooting and then our personal phones for all the navigation communication and looking up rules and whatnot. And then also there are wireless microphones and it all has to stay charged and you have to be getting the shot, you know, at all times. And so just doing that is a fair bit of work in and of itself. And I've shot a lot of video of myself, but not with this gear and not in these circumstances. So it was a lot of like learning, how do I hold it? What are various shots I can use in various circumstances? And then all the meanwhile, you know, rushing around Tokyo on trains and trying to play a game that I'm still have a shaky understanding of. So I was pretty nervous going into it. I know I talked to you guys a lot the day or two before and was like, what kind of shots do you want me to get? Like, how do you want me to do narration? You know, in particular, I was really nervous because I was the first guest on the show that was going to be shooting solo. And I wanted to make sure that I was shooting something that felt like it was part of jet lag and was kind of in the same style and that I wasn't missing anything important. And so, you know, we had a lot of talks about that. And, you know, what does jet lag style look like? And, you know, what shots do I need to absolutely make sure I get? Things like that.
I think you ended up shooting the most footage of anyone, Scotty, this season.
Did I?
Yeah, by a pretty large margin.
I was nervous you wouldn't have enough. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, it's good. It's plenty to work with. I was particularly worried going into the season, not about the rules, but the transit system is so intimidating. Not only because, like, you don't speak the language and no one really speaks English and a lot of things are just in Japanese, which we tried to convey at the beginning of this episode, but also, like, Google Tokyo Metro map. Like, just look up that image at home, and it is like terrifying.
It's really intense.
There are a billion trains. And by the end of the show, I feel like I was so comfortable with it, which was a good feeling. Like, I was navigating the last day, like, without using my phone, which was crazy.
I think that that's like a lot of the reason why I actually enjoyed this season so much. Again, it was super intimidating, but by the end of it, I felt so comfortable in such like a foreign environment, which is just like a cool feeling to experience. Because like it is really complicated, but all in kind of a logical way. So once you understand kind of the logic of the system and the different passes and how you pay for stuff and all sorts of different stuff like that, it all makes sense. It's just like there's a little bit of a intimidation factor and a bit of a knowledge barrier at the start, but not a massive one. I think it just feels more than it really is.
You touched on passes. So we did two overlapping pass systems. We had the JR Rail Pass, which is specifically for tourists and allows you to go on any of the bullet trains, as well as the JR run local trains in Tokyo. And then we also had a Suica card, which is really interesting and unique to Japan, I think. It's almost like a debit card. So it's not just a transit card. You can tap it on either the JR system or the Tokyo Metro system, but you can also pay for things like in 7-Eleven with it and at vending machines and all sorts of other places. And you just load money onto it at the train station and then you can tap it wherever you go. And it's just an NFC, you know, tap to pay type card. And so I think we were pretty much able to use just those two cards to do everything we did in the game. I was anyway. Did you guys end up doing anything else?
I had to use cash a couple of times.
And like buy tickets out of the ticket machine?
Yeah, I did that a couple of times because there were times where I couldn't get like any of my three Suica cards to work because I kept like demagnetizing them and stuff.
One of the problems I ran into with the Suica card is that if you go into a train station with your Suica and then you want to leave the same train station without having gotten on a train, which really is only relevant if you're playing a travel-based game show, then the system errors out and you have to go to the station master in the booth and get him to like clear it. And usually he kind of goes, oh God, okay, foreigners, and waves you through.
Yeah.
But it's still a huge delay because sometimes you have to stand in line and stuff.
Well, miraculously, Scotty and I, we successfully got on our first train.
We did.
In the intended direction.
Yes. I was going to say that.
To the intended destination.
Yeah, in the right direction even.
Yeah. So, I mean, in the opening moments, things are looking great for us.
Yes.
And then we get to Shinagawa Station and we pull. I don't want to come across as too salty, but Ben, out of all the cards, how much would you want this one?
This was probably the last one I would have wanted to pull of anything in the deck. I mean, contextually, there are some that could be worse at any given moment, but that card was meant to be kind of a giant middle finger to whoever pulled it. And you guys pulled it as your first card, which was very funny in retrospect. We couldn't figure out what was going on with you guys, but it was that.
Yeah.
Thank you for validating my feelings.
And there were two problems with that card. I mean, one, there was the whole like manual dexterity thing, which is neither of Sam nor I's strong suit. But also, we were trying to find sake at 7:30 in the morning. On a Sunday.
Was actually a lot easier than I expected in the end.
Yeah, I thought that was going to get really brutal there for a minute.
Yeah, I was like starting to research like liquor stores and seeing that there were none open and stuff like that. We searched for much longer than it seems on camera. Not massively long, but like probably good.
Yeah, it was like 5 or 10 minutes at least.
Yeah, like we checked a good number of spots.
I was super jazzed because we had actually, in one of our prep days, we had actually done a test. We had stayed in a hotel right near that, near Shinagawa Station, like walking distance. Adam and Ben and I had gone to Shinagawa Station to do a test of the trackers to see how easy it was to catch somebody. And so I had wandered through the grocery store that's part of that train station. And so I was like, oh, I know exactly where we can get sake. And of course, it was closed at 7:30 in the morning.
Yep.
Interestingly enough, and this might be foreshadowing for the future, we had concluded from that test that it was quite hard to find someone in a train station based on their tracker.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Adam was not able to find Ben nor I in, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes.
I think that informed a lot of both teams' opening strategy, because I think that like Adam and I think we were feeling much more confident about how effective defense would be. And so we were putting a lot of value in having a defender at any given time. And I think both of you at the very outset of the game were kind of skeptical about how effective that might be, how easy it might be to catch someone, especially in Tokyo.
How did you draw that conclusion from the test we did in Shinagawa Station where Adam couldn't find either one of us?
This is, I think, maybe like a bit of sort of like game experience, but like, well, first of all, I feel like Adam gave up way too easy when we were testing.
That's what I wonder in retrospect.
I thought he was sandbagging.
Yeah, I wonder if he was giving me false confidence.
I don't think he was acting in bad faith, but I do think that like if we were actually in the game and he was actually in Adam mode, he would have found both of us.
Yeah, I agree in retrospect.
And torn us to shreds.
Yes.
But I also think that like one of the main factors at play when you get caught is like you are juggling a million things. You're trying to navigate. You're trying to figure out what your partner's doing. You're trying to figure out what the other players are doing. You're worried about a challenge. You have multiple phones and all this equipment that you're trying to deal with. And so like, if all you're doing is you're just in a station trying to not get caught and that's it, it's much easier to not get caught than when you're playing the game and you're trying to not get caught. And that, I mean, as is seen in this episode, like there were a million distractions and reasons why I ultimately got caught by Sam, that I think if that was the only thing I was trying to do, it would have been a lot easier to not have that happen.
Yeah, I mean, catches, I think, almost always happen due to some extraneous factor. There's almost no moment in the game where the only thing you can be focusing on is not getting caught. That's rare. Not just in this game, but I think in any of the games that we've played. I guess the main other one that we've had catching in, well, I guess, you know, we both have Pilot Season, Crime Spree, but also mostly like Tag. So they almost always come from like mistakes or the need to do something else at a moment. But next up, what happens is I steal Ben's job.
Yep, you get drunk. You drank a lot more of that sake than we actually showed on camera.
You drank the whole bottle, if I remember correctly.
I didn't get drunk. I got buzzed. Well, I didn't want to have to carry around all that weight.
Yeah, trash was a real issue in this season.
Well, yeah, especially in Tokyo. It became less of an issue outside of Tokyo, but the Tokyo stations, very rare to have trash cans. And outside of the stations, no trash cans, like no street trash cans at all. And then we went on a little bit of a walk. So I think it's worth explaining why we went on a walk at this moment.
Well, let's take a step back, because I noticed in the edit, I don't think we explained what our ball was for sake pong. It was a creamer cup.
Oh, right.
From the convenience store.
Which was specifically allowed. For some reason, Ben, maybe you know, I don't think this made it to the version that we showed on screen, but we had written makeshift balls were allowed.
Yes, they were. It was because we didn't want to pack ping pong balls.
Right. But I don't know why we didn't have that in the text of the card that went on screen.
Oh, was it?
I think we missed it. Anyway, but yes, it was a creamer ball. But I want to pre-defend against any accusations of malpractice.
No, that was valid.
So I guess, keep in mind from our perspective, we were very confused by what Adam was up to, taking yeah. a train slightly north into his own territory and then turning around. So anytime I think in this game when we're confused, we get like spooked because it's like, oh, they must know something we don't.
Yes, we were very paranoid at that moment and were convinced that he had done it on purpose to try and fake us out.
He was so yeah. upset when he went the wrong direction. You know, we didn't show all of that phone call, but he was so worried that like the whole game was thrown. I was like, you went like one stop the wrong direction. It's okay. He was like, should we switch roles? Should we? Mm-hmm. I was like, it's fine. Just go back. It'll be okay.
Basically, I think the ultimate reason why Scotty and I went for a little bit of a walk is because we were not allowed to get on transit. We already recognized that we wanted to return back to Tokyo Station to go after Ben at this moment because we recognized that Ben had too much of a head start. So we had to go after Ben at this moment, considering our 30-minute veto period. And we wanted Adam to ultimately, I think, do what he did, which is go past us because we wanted it to look like we were doing a challenge.
My recollection at the time was that we just wanted to open a gap between us and the station so that we had more options to run mm-hmm. away. Because we weren't allowing any other transport besides trains, the further you are from any train station, kind of the safer you are and the more options you have to evade.
Yeah.
And so I think our plan was just to head towards Tokyo Station and figure that if he came after us, we could beat him to the next train station and then we'd be able to retreat safely.
Well, I do remember a little bit of wanting to look like a champ. Like, I think that was part of it. But I remember like yeah. the reason we cut into some of the streets rather than just stay on that big yes. street was because we wanted to look like we were looking for something.
Yes, that's true.
Part of it, we just wanted to confuse y'all and not make it seem like we got vetoed. We wanted it to seem like we earned budget and therefore in a confident position and y'all should be scared and all of that. Simultaneously, Ben, you're earning some cash, right?
No, I mean, I really just got quite lucky with my challenges to begin with. We didn't show this, but I went on two trains to get to where I was because I was trying to go to near a mall because I thought that would be the best place to do challenges and also not get caught. But it turns out that like almost anywhere in Tokyo was pretty good to do challenges because it's all so developed and urban that it would have been fine pretty much anywhere. And I think later in the game, I think we all sort of have spots that were like, this is the spot I'm going to go to in Tokyo to like grind out challenges because I know that it like has so much stuff around it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I went up there and then both of those I probably could have done anywhere. And then I went for the flag and I was not that worried because I thought I was going to have time to just go right on back. And I was wrong.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, you probably, honestly, we didn't really game plan that far in advance because we were so go, go, go. And because we kind of make a point of not planning before the cameras start rolling for these things to make sure that it's like somewhat organic. So like Scotty and I didn't really have that defined of a long-term plan, but we certainly, at least the both of us would not have gone after you if we had finished that challenge. I don't know if we ever really discussed it.
Yeah, I think what we had discussed was that it was much more advantageous to do challenges together and travel together.
Mm-hmm.
Straight off the bat. So I think we were planning on sticking together until it seemed strategically obvious that we should split up.
I guess that's true because in this situation, we theoretically had the speed advantage.
Right.
By traveling together versus Ben solo. So theoretically, not factoring in the chance of what challenge you pull or anything like that, theoretically, we could have gotten to our flag and back faster than Ben could have. So yeah, I guess that's true that we might have done that.
I will also admit that I think there was, at least on my part, there was a fair amount of hubris that Sam and I would fare better at navigating the Tokyo train system than Ben and Adam would, because we had both been to Japan before, we had both traveled on trains, and we had both done a lot of travel in Asia, and this was both Ben and Adam's first time to Asia, right?
Yeah, well, we'd been to Singapore in season two, but that's...
That doesn't count.
That's it. And that doesn't count, as many people would say.
Singapore is lovely, but it does not have the challenges of traveling in, say, Tokyo.
No, it did not.
And so our theory was that we could move faster.
Yeah. I mean, it was true in the opening moments of the season.
Yeah, we both got pretty lost.
Yeah. I will say it played much less of a factor than I thought it would.
Yeah.
From what I saw. And I've only seen episode one edited so far, so I have no idea how much.
Hey, they're professional travelers now.
Yeah, apparently.
That's true.
And athletes, I'm told.
That's true. Professional athletes. I stand by that.
Yeah, professional elite athletes. So about now in the episode, this is when Scotty and I realize, and you know, think of a fun name for it, the little back door into Tokyo, little Tokyo Bay back door.
Yeah.
Ben, give me a fun name.
The Southern Escape.
The Southern Escape.
Sure, that's good. The Southern Escape.
I think that little outcropping has a name, but I can't remember. Is that whole region called Chiba? Maybe? I don't know.
I don't know. Well, anyway. But yeah, like, I think Scotty, you first pointed it out. And at first I was like skeptical, like no way. Cause like weirdly, like this is something that unless y'all played it out for the camera, I don't think any of us realize this in simulation, which is kind of crazy.
Is that true?
The thing about these is that I think the person who actually knew these escape routes from every flag best was none of us. It was actually Amy. Amy, who you might now know from Half as Interesting, did some work on this season. And she was the one that found a lot of these flag locations and determined like what the possible escapes were. So I think if we had done more work on those factors, like I think that's something we would have realized earlier, but that like I didn't know certainly. And I don't think Adam knew either because he figured it out on the fly.
Yeah. And the second that Scotty pointed that out, it was like big sinking feeling because that's tough because a lot of the basis for the game, a lot of the equalness is based on the fact that like you go to the flag and that's relatively easy, but you got to get back. So like it's about the opportunity to cut the runner off. By the way, we'll probably always say runner. That's our vocabulary for the person who is in the offensive territory going for the flag.
Ben, I thought we had identified the Southern Escape in playtesting the day before. At the hotel.
Maybe we had.
Didn't that come up?
Did we?
I don't know if we were playtesting even with that flag, though. Because this is also something that's kind of shoved off to the side and is not super evident in the episode. But, like, there are a bunch of flags in every region, and they were just sort of chosen at random at the beginning of the round. Which is also one of the reasons why we weren't that familiar intentionally with how to get to and back from every single one. Yep. So I don't know if we had tested with this one. But maybe we did.
I don't know that it was this flag in particular, but I think it had come up in the playtesting that the other side of the bay was across the line.
Yeah, that might be true.
Yeah. I mean, if it had, at the very least, I don't think we fully internalized the influence of that.
Well, and you weren't there for that playtesting, Sam. So that was a total surprise for you.
No, I was not. So that was not the greatest news.
No.
But all we had to do was catch Ben. And there was two of us, only one of Ben. In the moment, it felt very exciting.
We were way behind him, though.
We were. But Ben had to earn budget.
Right. I think that was our saving grace and our comfort factor was we decided there was no way he had enough coins to do anything.
Which is true. I was stuck with a card that I did not want to have. A card that we thought would be a lot easier and turned out was a lot harder.
I wish I had gotten that card because I would have nailed that.
See, Scotty, he suggested doing the exact thing that I tried to do, which didn't work as well as I thought it would work.
You didn't do it through the Google Translate app where you could have drawn out all of the characters for the entire sentence and then translated it. And then it would have gotten everything in context. There is handwriting entry for Google Translate, not like for an entire sentence.
I didn't know that. But some of the symbols were so complicated and I just wasn't getting them on my phone. For those who are curious what the card actually said, and again, Amy wrote this one because none of us were allowed to know what it was. Oh, no, it said in the episode.
Yeah, it's in the episode.
It was like, touch the nearest tree or something.
Yeah, touch the nearest.
Touch the nearest tree and declare I am a master translator or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. Which is funny because I was kind of getting, you know, some of those words, but also like a lot of the words that were coming up were just like really vague and like abstract. They were like serenity. And I was like, oh, interest. Like, I don't know.
Right. So probably what was going on there. I'm not an expert in Japanese, but I do know a decent amount about Chinese, despite not being able to speak it or read it very well, is that there are words that are multiple characters. And so unlike in English and lots of other languages, both Chinese and Japanese don't use spaces to segment words. It's up to the reader
to segment words as you're reading so that you know, oh, these three characters in a row, that's this word, and that means this. And so probably what you were getting is like serenity was part of a multi-character word that had a different meaning.
Yep, I think that was it. So it ended up being a bit of a problem. But here's one thing I can say. And we removed this from the episode because we didn't have time to get into it because it ended up not being relevant. But Adam had cooked up, and he would want me to say this, a very viable escape route. Even after both of you had gotten into position, there was a pretty good way for me to escape. I don't remember what it was anymore.
I thought we had it pretty well. Was it like to the north?
No, Adam walked me through this after the fact, I'm pretty sure. And I also forget the details. I know this makes for a terrific podcast segment, but
yeah, I was great. Pretty confident that we had every avenue pretty well covered.
Yeah, because I was like straddling two stations. Because I think the idea was that you would go on foot. Like you would have had a chance, but you would have gone on foot through the like rough, vague, bigger zone that I was straddling. But ultimately, of course, this was all very frustrating because Scotty and I put in a bunch of effort running around, high stress and everything. And like, you were not getting out of there regardless, considering like you had to veto that challenge. Yeah.
Well, I think also we need to point out exactly how long you spent in the neutral zone hanging out at the train station.
Yeah.
That was not covered at all in the edit. You were there for like at least half an hour.
Yeah. There was a lot of time where I was just on the phone with Adam and we were trying to figure out what we should even do. That's like something that I think gets lost in the edit sometimes is like there are just times where like the game is kind of at a standstill because every team is just trying to figure out like what the hell do we do next. And when I was at that monorail station, that was certainly one of those times. I figured that I was pretty safe walking out of the neutral zone going to veto a challenge because I figured that neither of you wanted to leave your spots that you had posted up in. But I was wrong about how aggressive you wanted to be.
Yeah, well, it was partially because, you know, Scotty accidentally got on like a express train over a limited. I was like slowly moving in towards you, but I was sort of under the mentality of like, you know, if I go any closer, he's just going to pop right back into the neutral zone, which is right there. So it was only really when Scotty kind of left that southern station open that I was like, oh no, can't let Ben do that. Need to go aggressive, even if he pops back in. And that's where it worked out.
My stomach was in knots as soon as I realized what I'd done.
Yeah.
Because I had just jumped on a train going the right direction and was like, this will be fine. It was not.
Yeah, the express train limited train thing is tough.
Very tough.
We had to pay very close attention to that later in the season because I think we learned.
Yes, that was painful. Well, it wasn't too painful, but it was a scary learning opportunity.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I feel like there's not a whole lot that doesn't show up on camera in that segment because it was like a pretty big moment. But that was pretty much it. In the end, it was like a fairly straightforward opening, I think. And as you'll see, the future episodes get incredibly more complicated in terms of game structure, in terms of our strategies, in terms of everything. So I think, as is usually the case, we have the least to say about the first episode because they tend to be more straightforward. But it gets, what does it get, Ben, again? Was it Chicken McCrispy?
It gets Chicken McCrispy. That's exactly what it gets. Yeah. I will say I reviewed the cut of episode 2 today, and I will say it's really fun. It's a great, great episode and a pretty long episode, but something definitely to look forward to. And you will see in that episode the way that the game starts to get more complicated, which I personally am very excited about. I think people are going to really love the direction that this season goes because it gets so chaotic and weird and just fun.
Yeah, I think we have the biggest number of like different strategies that we've ever had in a single game. We see so many different approaches to the same game.
Yeah. And ultimately, through all the rounds, like, I think that we use almost every possible strategy that this game could employ over the course of it.
A lot of trial and error.
Well, and I think, I don't know, maybe that's too much of a spoiler, but not all strategies worked very well at different times.
No.
Well, that's inevitably the case, yeah. But yeah, there was definitely plenty of trial and error. And I think in part because, as we talked about, I think we had the least understanding that we've ever had going into a game about what was the best strategy, how strong offense would be, how strong defense would be, how easy it would be to catch, how easy it would be to retrieve a flag, like all the different things. We just didn't know. our simulations were probably the least useful they've ever been because the game was so absurdly complicated.
And the simulations really don't simulate the on-foot component, right? Like,
oh yeah,
you know, we were kind of just simulating train travel as though it was a board game. And that,
yep.
I will say, I think the three of you had a lot of sort of strategic advantage in a broad sense because you had played tag. And I'd watched the tag mm-hmm. season, but it still was very hard to have a sense coming in of how hard is it going to be to tag someone? How easy is it going to be to evade someone? What's the difference between, you know, being on a train versus in a train station versus on the street when trying to evade or tag? You know, like there was just a lot of things where I was like, I don't know how this is going to go.
Yep.
And I think you guys were really drawing on your tag experience. And I think we'll see some of that come out in episode 2. The difference in experience level, specifically with that component.
Well, anything else to add, gentlemen?
No, but I'm looking forward to being here next week.
Yeah, likewise.
And Adam will be back from vacation. This is my vacation, doing the layover podcast.
You're Adam.
Oh.
Adam, anything else to add?
No, mate. Cheerio. Wow, Adam, you haven't been that talkative this episode.
All right. Cheerio, Adam.
See ya, Adam.
Cheerio, Adam.
See you next week. And see you, everyone else. Bye.
Bye. Bye.